People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. You may know that from the 23rd of May to the 31st of May, Cape Town Opera will be presenting one of Verdi's most famous and popular operas, Aida, set against the backdrop of war, forbidden love, betrayal, and cultural conflict. Cape Town Opera's artistic director, Magdalene Minnar, has unveiled a bold African futurism reimagining of this iconic opera, featuring an all-South African cast, and the new production transports the opera into a vivid imagined milieu where visual storytelling merges with cutting-edge animation and a striking minimalist set design. And that all sounds incredibly intriguing to me. But interestingly, what I thought anyway was we have visiting us from Vienna an opera coach called Brenda Rhine. And Brenda is here to help with this production of Aida. So I thought it would be an interesting angle, Brenda, to bring you in to talk about what your job actually is. And shall we start on that before we go back to your past and all this? First of all, welcome. Welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, I was surprised to discover that you were born in Cape Town.
Yeah, very long ago.
Right. But you've lived overseas for a very long time, haven't you?
Yeah, once for 10 years, and now it's already 25 years in Vienna.
Okay, so Vienna is in fact your home.
Yeah.
Now, Brenda, tell me exactly what an opera coach does.
Well, it's actually rather wonderful. You scream and shout at singers from the piano, and you get paid for that.
That's a way of looking at it.
But it's quite complicated. You must check the language, you must check the music, you must check the rhythm. And above all, you must, out of all those little black things called notes on the paper, you must find a character. And that comes from the text. And many singers don't like that. They just want to do the singing. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, every opera, basically, except Wagner, who wrote his own, has a story. It might come from the Bible, or it's a legend, or it's a fairy tale, or it's a drama, or whatever. So the text is incredibly important. And why did the composer do exactly that with the text? And one must analyze this and find this out together. And it's a wonderful journey, and I always find that whatever opera I'm working on at the moment is my favorite opera.
Yes. I remember Sir Adrian Bolt, the great conductor, when he was recording Brahms symphonies, a reviewer said to him, which is your favorite Brahms symphony? And he said, the one I'm working on at the moment. So
absolutely.
I understand that completely. But then is your repertoire very wide of the work that you do, or is it fairly central Italian, Baroque, Renaissance, modern?
Well, no, you see, when I started here at the old Nico Milan, it was a great amount of Italian opera. Rossini, Donizetti, Verdi, Puccini, Mozart. Okay, Mozart, one should say. Very few, if any, German opera, or French for that matter. So that's what I quasi grew up with. And then when I worked with Dion, it was mostly Mozart with Anna.
This is Dion van der Waals.
Dion van der Waals, yeah. Lot of Mozart and also French repertoire. Manon and Romeo and Juliet, stuff like that. With Johann.
Johann Burter.
I tootled into Wagner and Richard Strauss.
Good.
The big boys, okay? Mm-hmm. Which I did not know. Half the time with Johann, I spent just staring at that score and reading it. trying to find out for myself every chord, analyzing, and why is he going there, and why is he doing this, and all.
Which must have been quite a challenge with Wagner, especially.
Actually, you know, he was easier to understand than Strauss. Strauss is extremely difficult because every chord is in a new key.
Yes.
You have to constantly just check what key am I in, but then the key actually in the end plays no role because every chord is different anyway. That's got double flats and double sharps and not good. I think the hardest thing I did with Johann Allerdings was the Gurrelieder.
Yes, the Schönberg Gurrelieder, yes.
I thought we would never learn that, both of us, but we did. And it was a great success. And I think the hardest opera for Johann was one act, Daphne, Apollo. Dreadful role. High and strenuous. And then when you think the tenor is now on his gums, comes the last aria, where he rails against Papa, Zeus, because he is Apollo. I always get confused.
No, it's easy to get confused with those Greek gods.
No, 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 but who was the chef god when Apollo was? Was it Jupiter or was it Zeus? I always get confused.
Me too. Huh? So let's both accept that we're
Shall
confused.
We just march on?
We'll march on. But what I want to do, Brenda, is I want to take a music break now because I want to find out how you got involved with Dion van der Walt and with Johann Boerte and the effect that they had on your career. But you've chosen something from Aida, I'm glad to say, as your first piece of music, and that's the Act Two duet between Amneris, the mezzo, or Uscia Contralto.
No, mezzo.
Mezzo, and Aida, the soprano. And is there a reason you've chosen this amazing duet?
Yeah, because Amneris is, of course, the daughter of the pharaoh, of the king, and she loves Radames. And so does Aida. We have a typical situation. And Amneris suspects this and pretends to be very sweet and very nice to get Aida to admit it. And then she lies to Aida and says that Radames has died on the battlefield. And Aida is distraught. And then she knows what she wants to know.
Yeah.
And then she said, you love him, but I love him too. And who are you? And
you're a slave.
I mean, this is really
gritty stuff.
Gritty stuff. It's really in your face. I find the duet magnificent.
Oh!
That was part of the Act II duet from the opera Aida by Giuseppe Verdi. The Aida on that recording with Karajan conducting was sung by Renata Tebaldi, and the Amneris was sung by Giulietta Simeonato. And it was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Brenda Rhine. And we're talking about Aida, and in fact, Brenda is out here from Vienna as an opera coach for this production, which opens in May here with Cape Town Opera. You were telling me, Brenda, in the first half before the music, how you worked with Dion van der Walt and with Johan Boerte. But just tell me, even before that, how did you get into this world of opera? Were you ever a singer? Were you ever a...
Good heavens, no.
Oh, really? Okay, so how did you get into it all?
I did do singing for 1 year. First year at Varsity when I had to have a second subject, and I thought it was easy. It was not. And I then went through the harpsichord, and I ended up with Barry Smith on the organ, and by then I was official accompanist, God sei Dank. So I didn't have to sing anymore. Now, I could sight read very well.
Ah, that's useful.
And Professor Fiascunaro Cicci was ever trying to find pianists who could come and play for his opera school. And that's how I got into it. And then they built the Nico, and there was no chorus master yet. So he...
Fiascunaro.
He, yeah, actually taught the men the chorus. And I remember that I had to go and play because he couldn't play. So it was Gloria Dici, Toa Dici, because it was Aida, you know. Didn't, in fact, begin with Aida because Emma Renzi got ill. I think the ballet opened, actually.
It did, the ballet opened. Aida was meant to open,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So that's how I got into the opera. Then they made me official accompanist. But somehow I was more always with the singers. It was always with the singers, and I had an affinity to accompany them. I could breathe with them. I listened. And it was much more fun than practicing alone and alone and alone. And then I started working here permanently, and then you are a rehearsal pianist, and you sit and play operas, and no, come in, go out there, sit down now, and now you kill him, and now you kiss her, and then you have to play for all that, and you get to know the works, but actually superficially. Mm-hmm. And then somebody will eventually say, you know, a little role, small role, adjutant or something, go and work with him and teach him that. And that's how it starts. You get to the big guns much later. Mm-hmm. You don't learn this anywhere. You learn by doing and by trusting the score. And the idea is to bring a singer so far that you can hand him over to the conductor in the absolute conviction and knowledge that he knows exactly what is happening there and he knows exactly what to do. And the conductor can either say very good and be happy with it or take him further. Because there's other ideas to build on to. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And with the years, it just got more and more and more. And somehow I got a reputation for being a very good rep. Repetito. And it's the perfect job for me.
Really?
Because I find, unfortunately, there are many, many pianists who play. I don't know why they do that, if they do it for money. But they are always pianists. And I consider myself as an orchestra. And David Titbold helped me with that. I mean, I was told, you know, that the oboe plays that. So sing on the keyboard. Or why you go baga daga 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 daga? It is timps just.
But David Titbold was a great conductor.
Oh, he was magnificent. Yeah. But screamed at me regularly. But I knew he wouldn't bother if he didn't think there was something there.
Of course, absolutely true.
But it was nice to know.
Yes.
But between him or Angelo and Cici, I tell you, it was hard.
So you worked with the big names, Angelo Gobato, Fiascunaro,
yeah.
David Titbold.
Yeah.
Murray Dickey.
Oh, yeah. He made me Studienleiter. He adored me. Studienleiter's head of studies.
Okay.
And I was the only woman, and I had four men under me.
Unusual for that time, I'm sure.
Rather nice.
Especially in South Africa, yes. Gosh.
That was great fun. I also then went to PACT for 2 years, also mm-hmm. in that capacity.
When did you go overseas for the first time? I mean, before you got involved with Dion van der Walt and Johan Boerter.
That was in 76.
That you went over for the first time?
Yeah.
Into an opera company? Or you told me something about ballet?
I was on holiday.
Oh,
and
okay.
I was staying with a friend of mine who was studying singing with Metternich, Josef Metternich. Oh, I had this weird technique.
Mm-hmm.
Like you sing as if you're on the loo. You know, one of those. It was dreadful. He had one lung. In those days, they used to sing everything in German, okay, mm-hmm. including Barber of Seville. And he sang the Barber, and he would go, Figaro, 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 with one lung, and you understood every word. That was, Sean, I must say, astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
And this friend I was staying with, Martin, said, you know, but now you're here, why don't you audition? And then I did go and audition, but I didn't realize the job was for a ballet pianist.
Oh, dear.
And so I got it.
Where was this? This was in Aachen,
you
said.
This was in Aachen, yeah.
And you got it?
Yeah. And so I ended up, I was then told by the GMD, yeah, you've got the job. Unfortunately, the ballet master wasn't at the audition. And I thought, why would there be a ballet master? And then I was told it's to play for the ballet. But then I thought, well, then I'm here.
Yeah,
okay, and
yeah.
I've got a job. So that was quite lustig. I had absolutely no idea of a plié and arabesque and what you had to do. And I couldn't speak German. But I survived somehow.
Good for you. So that was a good basis, really, for working in theater as well.
Yeah, but then I came back because I got married and I did not, I wasn't happy. So I gave up that and I came back here and then I was here for 10 years.
Okay, now we're going to pick up the story after this next piece of music.
Yes.
And I'm rather surprised to see that you've chosen Queen's famous song, Bohemian Rhapsody.
I must also say that Johan Boerter died because of that. He loved it.
Why did he die because of it?
Because it was so gorgeous.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, we would sit there together and loud, and it was gorgeous.
We're not going to be able to take the whole thing, but let's see what we can do, because
okay.
It's too long. So here's part of the original Queen version of their hit Bohemian Rhapsody.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go, little high. Doesn't really matter to me. Mama just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead.
Back again this time. little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo Figaro.
Magnifico!
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family. Spare him his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go. Will not let you go.
Never,
will not let you go.
Mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me, for me.
Well, that's part of the Bohemian Rhapsody, that famous song by Queen, and a remarkable song as well. And it was the choice of my guest, Brenda Rein, who is in Cape Town, her hometown, but she lives in Vienna, as the opera coach for the upcoming production of Cape Town Opera's Aida here at Artscape. Now, earlier on, I mentioned the names Dion van der Walt and Johan Boerter, both of whom, well, first of all, Dion van der Walt offered you a job as his personal coach. How did that actually come about?
He'd sung here a few times. He was beginning to make a career. And I remember that he asked me, he was going to go to Covent Garden to sing The Barber of Seville, and if I could help him. But we were still very, I was rep and he was soloist. And so we did some work on that. And when he came again, we were more friendly. And when he came the third time, I remember I was already in Pretoria and he was doing a nationwide leader tour with Albie van Schalkwyk. And I paged for Albie. And afterwards, there was a party. Terribly la-di-da, people. And I fled and sat around the corner on white marble steps, I remember, and had a drink. And Dion came around the corner and also sat there and said, dreadful party, isn't it? Anyway, so we started talking, and he asked me if I could come in the summer to Salzburg for a month and teach him Romeo and Juliet. So I said, I don't know if I have leave. I'll find out and I'll let him know. And I did have leave. And he bought me a ticket and I flew over and I stayed with him in the house that he rented in Salzburg. And he was singing at the time with under Muti, Riccardo Muti. He was singing Così. And there was no piano in this house that he rented. So he rented a piano, and so we sat every day and tootled our way through this opera. Because he had only, he said, 1 week of stage rehearsals. It was and somebody else had sung the premiere.
A revival.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. I was thinking Wiederaufnahme. So he wouldn't have lots of time. He had to know it extremely well. So that I did for a month. And one night, and by then I'd resigned from PACT. I wasn't really happy there.
You resigned while you were over there in Europe?
No, before.
Oh, before, okay.
And he said, now what are you going to do? After one performance, we sat in a beer garden. And I said, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said, come and work for me. That's how it started.
Wow. Meaning that you were his personal coach?
Yeah, just for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, you can stay with me, and if that doesn't work, if we don't get on, then we find you an apartment, but I want to work with you. So I stayed in his apartment for almost 10 years until that all went terribly awry. You know that story.
Yes,
we won't
course.
Talk about that. Then I came back to South Africa, and I started in Pretoria a group called the Black Ties.
Yes, I remember them well.
And they were just 10 then.
Mm-hmm.
They got very big later.
They did.
And I had fun with them. And one night I was sitting with Elizabeth Lombard. We were sitting having a glass of wine after we'd worked. And my phone rang, and there was this voice. This is Johan Botha, and I want you to work for me. And I thought somebody was sending me up. So I giggled and said, that's how funny. And I gave him a number. And I said, fax me what you envisage. And I thought, if this is somebody sending me up, he won't do that. But he did. And he offered me a similar position. And he
to
said,
be his personal voice coach.
And he explained to me that Daniel Barenboim had accused him of not knowing his work when he arrived. And when I got there, I understood why. Because Johan was incredibly handicapped. He was dyslexic. So learning Wagner, all those words, were extremely difficult for him.
Mm-hmm.
And also he couldn't really read music. So it was repeat, 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 repeat.
Yes. Note and bashing, they used to call it in choirs.
Yeah, I was a bit shocked by that at the beginning. But I understood why, because he could only just work with somebody when he was in a specific city and he was singing in that theater, then a pianist would have an hour free to work with him, and that was not enough for Johan. He needed to do that every day, consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to learn all that was very, very hard. But when we got going, that man's career took off. He was already very much there. But he went through this final door. I mean, he was considered one of the best Wagner tenors.
Yes, he was a real Helden tenor.
Absolutely.
A big voice. And he did some of the big roles, like Lohengrin, I think.
Yeah.
He did Verdi's Otello.
Yes. He did big Verdi's. He did the Carlos. He did Otello. He did Turandot, the big Italians.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the only Wagner role he never did was Siegfried.
Did he do Sigmund as well?
Sigmund,
yes, yes.
In fact, that
did he do Tristan?
Well, now that's very sad. We were working on it when he died.
Oh, no.
We were working on the last act, the big monologue.
Yes.
And his agent used to maintain that Johan Botha was born to sing Tristan. But it was not to be.
No, no. But he didn't have a tragic end like Dion, but he got suddenly very ill, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he died too early.
Much too early.
But what I was happy about was that it was over in 10 months.
Yeah,
he didn't suffer for years and years and years.
And this was all in Vienna, was it? You worked with him in Vienna.
Yeah, but I went with him everywhere because there was always a new opera to learn while he was singing one. And doing another one, and some works he just ate up.
Mm-hmm.
Some works were like chewing bubble gum. And only once did he give back a role, and that was Matthias der Mahler.
Oh, Hindemith, yeah. I'm almost tempted to say I don't blame him, but I better not say
I didn't blame him either. And he gave them ample warning. I gave them more than 6 months' notice and said, I just can't get my teeth into this.
So when you were with Dion van der Walt and then with Johan Boerte, were you just with them? You didn't do anything else with any other singers?
Actually, it's now and then people that they were singing with would say to them, would you mind if Brenda also worked with me?
Okay.
And Johan used to say, not at all, but I must warn you, she's very honest.
Shouting at them, being rude and cruel.
But cruel, yeah.
Brenda, we're going to take another of your pieces now, and we go to Richard Strauss' Der Rosenkavalier and the famous Act 3 trio that ends the opera. Why have you chosen this? Apart from its incredible beauty.
Well, that's the reason. This is just exquisite. There's some people who maintain, and I agree with that, that some of Strauss's music, like, for example, the second act quasi-love duet between Octavian and Sophie, sort of waffles. And I think that was one of the times that Strauss's wife said, Richard, go compose. But the trio is true inspiration.
Well, that's just part of that beautiful and famous trio from Act 3 of Der Rosenkavalier that brings the opera to a close. And it was the third choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Brenda Rhine, who is here in Cape Town, her home incidentally, all the way from Vienna, to be the opera coach for the upcoming production of Verdi's Aida in May here in Cape Town, Cape Town Opera. Brenda, when we've talked about people like Dion van der Walt and with Johan Boerter, both of them had, as we know, fantastic careers and worked with great conductors. Dion worked a lot with Nicholas Anoncourt, for example, and I think he recorded Fidelio with him and maybe one of the other Mozart operas, maybe.
Così.
But you also must have met these great men. You mentioned Riccardo Muti just now.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about George Scholti. Did you meet them and talk to them? And did you work with them at all?
One of the nicest was Sinopoli, but he died very soon after I arrived.
In Aida, apparently, as Act 3 began.
Yeah.
Literally on the podium he died.
Yeah. But that's what every conductor would like to do, sort of die on the job, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Muti I met in Salzburg that first time I went. And it was so funny because next to me sat a very gorgeous Italian lady dressed to kill with a younger version. And I've thought this is mother and daughter. Okay. So comes interval or afterwards, I can't remember. And I go to Dion's dressing room and there stands the maestro. And this is his wife and daughter.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, he was very good looking, Riccardo Muti.
Then he was, yeah. Yes, but yes. He had this habit of looking at you through his nostrils.
Oh, yes.
Extremely.
Arrogant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, but that must be said.
Oh, yes, but he was, I mean, as a Verdi conductor, for example, he is excellent.
Yeah, he was good. But a lot of people also liked him in Mozart. I was not such a fan.
Mm-hmm.
But Mozart, for me, is a bit holy. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Scholti conducted in the Mozart year, Zauberflöte. And the Mozart year 91 was only Mozart operas in Salzburg. And mm-hmm. strange enough, they started with the Zauberflöte. And he sang along. While he was conducting. So halfway in the house, you could hear Scholti singing.
But not in the performance, surely.
Yes.
No.
Like he was in pain.
Well, you know, he was famous. There's a conductor's video where somebody says that Scholti, who got the nickname the Screaming Skull from the London Philharmonic, because he talked all the way through the rehearsals, shouted. He rather shouted.
Yeah.
He never stopped. And apparently orchestras prefer that. They don't like to stop and start.
Oh.
But he shouted, and you see rehearsal sequences with him. And he's constantly in that hoarse voice of his yelling at the orchestra. I didn't realize he did it in the performance.
Oh, no, it was hilarious.
Was he a nice man?
Yeah, he was. But, you know, typical sort of big boss kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
And the first time it came, he played the ta-ga-ta-ga-da. He played bells himself. It was actually rather fun.
Yes, I'm sure. In Zauberflöte.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I remember at the final dress was not an open rehearsal, but a few of us were allowed in because we now belonged to certain singers. You know, it was the wife of this one and the husband of that one. The opera just didn't stop, and it didn't start, and it didn't start. And Dion was under the stage. The stage would open, and he would come up, and this enormous snake would come, was behind him. It was to heal for. And he said to me later, I stood there, and I thought, why don't we go? It was the technical guys were striking because they saw that there were a few people in the auditorium and they wanted their people to come too. And they were told they were not allowed to come. So Scholti proceeded to climb over the chairs and saying, ow, ows, rouse. We all slunk back later, sort of creeping along the floor.
Oh, so he threw you out, the people who were already in.
He threw us all out. We were about 50, I would say. This was not allowed now. But he was a sweet old gentleman and very musical.
And these are the sort of people that you had to hand your singers over to. Like you said, you prepare them and you hand them to the conductor.
Yeah.
And the conductor then hopes that you've trained them properly.
Yeah, I hope.
Well, you hope, yes. But clearly you had a reputation because clearly you did.
I was extremely lucky. No conductor ever said, good God, who did you work with on this?
Yeah.
Sometimes they had absolutely nothing to say, which I thought...
Yes, no news is good news.
No news is good news. But with Anencore, it was never right. Anencore was absolutely always against what it said in the music. It was hilarious. If it said allegro, he would do it andante. Da da dum bum 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 bum. Everybody else goes ba da dum bum 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 bum. Yeah. So Dion and I used to try everything in every possible form so that he would not be surprised. And then he would come back. Anuko was one who didn't want anybody else there. So I was never there, so I didn't know what he said. But then Dion would come home and said, you won't believe it. It's totally different.
From what you had training to do.
Every possible we thought.
But it also shows you, Brenda, that singers have to be flexible. In the different interpretations they have to do.
Absolutely.
And be told by one conductor to do their same role completely differently from what another conductor had
taught them.
That
can happen. It's faster. It's slower. He wants more of this. He wants more of that. Mm-hmm. No, that's all. I find modern, newer conductors like Thielemann and Petrenko and so on, they are far less... shall we say, slow, and they don't indulge. Mm-hmm. Older gentlemen tend to sort of, you know, allow the singer to largely shine and do his thing. These more modern conductors, far more streamlined, generally faster, and all nonsense is shed. It is what is written, and that's the way.
Well,
that's the Bible.
Now we have the adagio from Samuel Barber's Serenade for Strings from his string quartet originally. So now this must be special to you because it's a special piece of music.
It is. When I go forever. Up there or down there, one never knows. I would like this played.
Thank you.
Goodness me. One of the most difficult things I've had to do is fade out Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. But otherwise we wouldn't have any time. Brenda Ryan, who's my guest, has chosen long pieces of music. Brenda, you've challenged us here in the studio.
Sorry.
Brenda, what I wanted to ask you was, you have traveled around, haven't you, to different opera houses as well?
Yeah.
Around the world. Have you been to the big, have you been to Bayreuth, for example?
Oh, yeah. 3 years in a row.
Really, really?
Actually, four. He jumped in for somebody.
This is Johann Burta, obviously.
This is Johann. And then 3 years in a row, The New Ring by Castorf, which was shockingly dreadful.
I've heard about that ring, yes.
Oh, I mean, it was just one thing. We work on this, and we work on Siegmund, and it's the sword, and it's the sword, and the Schwert, and mein Vater Schwert, und Schwert. And he goes to the first concept discussion, and he comes back, and he says, no, there's no sword. I've got an AK-47.
Oh, no. Oh, one of those. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, and so what did you say? And he said, I want a sword. So in the end, he was the only one with a sword.
This is Johann you're talking about. It's good. I'm glad. The reason you're here is because of Aida coming up on the 23rd of May here with Cape Town Opera, directed by Magdalien Minnaar. But what I wanted to say, just talk about Aida for a while, because I'm so excited that they're doing it, and I gather the tickets are selling very well.
Really? That's good.
Yes. But I've always thought that Aida is a tricky opera. First of all, it's one of the grandest operas because of the triumphal scene, but also it's one of the most intimate operas.
Absolutely.
Because of the Nile scene, for example, where it's almost like chamber music, and it ends right at the very end in almost a sort of chamber music way as the two die in their tomb and the chorus chants gently above. It's an opera of many moods, isn't it?
Yeah. I find it's very taxing, and there's very many high B flats for the tenor, and quite a few of them are soft.
Like allegedly the end of Celeste Aida.
Yes, and which he does.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think that he didn't think that he could, but he does it very well. I'm afraid I insisted. It is just, also, you know, Verdi had this problem that whenever his operas went to Paris, he had to have ballet in.
Yes, that's right.
So now we have da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, this funny little dances all along. Sort of, it's not his best music.
But.
Bush.
The dance in the middle, excuse me for interrupting,
yeah,
the dance in the middle of the temple scene, which is one of my favorite scenes in all opera, where the priest, that dance is beautiful music. But it's so evocative, and you wonder how Verdi was able to pick up the sort of sound and mood and flavor of Egypt when he's in Italy. He never traveled to Egypt, but somehow he made the opera sound Egyptian.
Yeah, for me especially, the beginning of the Nile scene.
Yes, very much so.
Put this moonlight on the water.
Yes, you used that as a lovely, and it is, it's a magical, magical
moment. You can really hear it.
Yes.
Somehow.
And it's a big chorus. Do you have anything to do with the chorus in a work like this?
Oh, no.
Okay. You're working purely with the soloists.
Yeah.
And all the soloists, not just the leads, but
the
high priest and the kings and the understudies.
Yeah.
Do you help them as well with vocal production? I mean, you're not a singing teacher, are you?
No. Absolutely not. I would never, ever dare to fiddle with somebody's voice, because you've got only one, and if I say something wrong and they do it and the voice is gone, you can't go and buy a new one, you know?
Yeah.
That's for the specialists. But yes. I can say that sound is wrong. That is too attacked. You're attacking it. It's too hard. It's too this, too that. Float. I want more of a floaty sound. That sort of thing. And I expect the singer, either alone or with a teacher, to sort that out.
Right, okay. Strict Brenda here. We're hearing, as you said right at the beginning, what a life. You sit at the piano and scream at the singers. On that note, Brenda, we're going to stop. I'm really looking forward to this production, also to see what Magdalien Minnaar has done with this African futurism idea. So don't give anything away if you know already.
But mum's the word.
Brenda Ryan, thank you for coming and chatting to us. And I hope you enjoy your stay here. Then you go back to Vienna, apparently, and live there.
I'm having a wonderful time. I'm doing a job I love. I'm in a city I adore. Today's not so good because I can't see the mountain. But otherwise.
Okay. Now, your last piece is by Nina Simone. Please don't let me be misunderstood. You said it was your anthem for the singers to shout at.
No. Just generally, I was found at one point of my life, I was forever saying, sorry, sorry, I did this and I did that, and sorry, sorry. I sort of lost the line.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that, I thought this was written for me. Okay. And I love her anyway.
Okay. So here's Nina Simone, and she's one of the choices of my guest, Brenda Ryan. Brenda, thanks and all the best.
It was a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree, with a joy that's hard to hide. And then sometimes again it seems that all I have is worry. And then you're bound to see my other side. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. If I seem edgy, I want you to know I never mean to take it out on you. Life has its problems, and I get more than my share. But that's one thing I never mean to do, 'cause I love you. Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I have done. 'Cause I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be misunderstood.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
FMR.